This is Solo Travel Talk. Your solo travel advisor is Astrid Clements.
Miami is a top tourism destination, but it also has a rich history and a vibrant architectural preservation movement. Alexandra Bassel is a certified heritage tourism guide in Miami, and she joins us on Solo Travel Talk to give her insights and insider scoop as a second-generation Miamian. I'm producer Catherine O'Brien. Your solo travel advisor, Astrid Clements, knew that Alexandra was the right person to tell us all about wonderful Miami. If you only think of beaches when you think of Miami, this is the episode for you. Well, first of all, thank you so much for being on Solo Travel Talk.
You're welcome.
And can you tell us, first off, I'm very curious, what does it mean to be a certified heritage tourism guide?
Well, I actually was approached by the Greater Miami Convention and Visitors Bureau in 2006, along with several other Art Deco tour guides. We had all been trained originally to give the Art Deco walking tour in South Beach's historic Art Deco district by the Miami Design Preservation League. They were one of the organizations, it was the organization that was able to save the historic Art Deco district and all the buildings in it by putting it on the historic register back in 1979. So one of their tools to spread the word and publicize the value of the historic buildings was to train guides to lead walking tours to talk about the history of the preservation movement and the architectural details of the buildings themselves. So I was trained by them in 1999, and then in the interim, many different people started offering tours, but they didn't really give the tour guides that they were training and, you know, setting loose, you know, on the city with the tourists, any kind of historical background. It was just kind of, here's the script, just, you know, read it, make it up as you go along. So the Greater Miami Convention and Visitors Bureau, you know, which is comprised of many local hotels and organizations, because tourism is our only industry here in South Florida besides real estate. That's the other thing that's important to understand about the area. So, you know, you have to figure out a way to serve the tourists because they're the biggest revenue generators in the area. So the Greater Miami Convention and Visitors Bureau felt that it was really important for their tour operators and people that they work with around the world to generate tourism to South Florida, to have someone telling the real story about the history. So they designed a course along with the Miami-Dade College Travel and Tourism Institute, where we actually attended classes both at the Miami Design Preservation League headquarters here in Miami Beach and also at Miami-Dade Community College at the Wolfson campus in downtown Miami. And one of the professors of history there, you know, he's a PhD professor of history, Dr. Paul George, he led the portion that was all about the history of Miami. We also had to take a 100-word test, 100-question test at the end of the course in order to receive our certification.
Wow. It sounds like they were really, they really took it seriously to make sure that people knew what they were talking about as they were developing this program.
Right. And you know, they were really prescient because this fact is after that was in 2006. And after that, in the next 5 to 6 years, all these different tour bus companies came into the market where, you know, how they have that tour bus in many other capitals internationally where you pay one price to get on the bus at all these different stops for like $18 a ticket or something. And, you know, for people that aren't able to, you know, walk all over the place or for cities that, you know, there's a lot more to see than one can accomplish by walking, you know, in 1 or 2 days, the tour bus really provides that service. So those tour guides also, I was actually hired to write the script for one of those tour buses because they wanted to hire people who, you know, needed work, but that didn't necessarily mean that they were ever trained to be a tour guide or to actually know what the history of Miami is that they're pointing out from the tour bus as it sped by. So that's why it's important to actually, you know, have this certification, in my opinion, and I don't know what happened to all the other people I went to this class with. I see some of them, but we're not unified, you know, anymore. We don't, like, go back to get recertified or get CEUs, but, you know, people here locally know from the badge I wear that says, you know, it's from the Greater Miami Convention and Visitors Bureau, and it says Certified Heritage Tourism Guide, that, you know, I didn't just make that up or it wasn't just given to me. Somebody actually, you know, tested my knowledge, you know, because that's like regular certifications for other jobs. You know what I mean?
I do. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I want to talk specifically about Art Deco, but I want to first hear, how did you get into this work? You must have a background that would lend yourself to this kind of, to being certified and have this interest.
Well, I have to tell you that as a second-generation native Miamian who was born and raised here, you know, from the time I was a little kid, at, you know, in the winter especially, when people would come to visit my parents or our relatives, all they wanted to do was get in the car and drive around Miami and tour. And because this is, you know, a tourism capital, there was always trips to certain places. I mean, in those days, there was a lot less choices of what we were going to quote-unquote tour. You know, it was the beach, which was, you know, probably 50 to 60% of why somebody was visiting Miami to begin with, was to go to the beach. And then there was other places that were promoted as, you know, part of the whole tourism mecca, which included Vizcaya, which is the James Deering Mediterranean Revival Estate in Coconut Grove. That was kind of our first tourist attraction here in Miami after he gave it to the city. You know, like he died, his heirs gave it to the city instead of keeping it up themselves. You know, it would have been a financial drain, for example. Vitz Aquarium, you know, anything about water and water, you know, life also became a tourist destination. And other places like Hialeah Racetrack, that was one of the first horse racing tracks in the U.S., you know, that was linked to the other, you know, racing tracks like Saratoga and those places. And that was also, you know, beautifully designed and had flamingos that actually kind of had, you know, a show of flamingos marching to music as, you know, the offering in between the actual races, the actual horse races, for example.
Wow.
So, As a kid, you know, my mother was always taking people that were visiting and I was tagging along. And because I'm a public relations professional and I've already been in leadership roles in different organizations, speaking in front of groups, it's really natural for me to, you know, talk about what Miami has to offer. I'm already an extrovert. I don't have any problem talking to people I don't know, you know, sharing my knowledge. I really have a passion for historic restoration personally. And the whole reason why I came back from Manhattan in 1987 was to buy a place on Miami Beach before anything changed and while it was still affordable, because I could tell from having lived in neighborhoods in San Francisco and New York that were gentrified after, you know, people, quote unquote, discovered them and the beauty of their small scale and, you know, what a real neighborhood has to offer that has character, that, you know, in my mind's eye, I started realizing it was here in South Beach and I had totally discounted it for so many years because it just wasn't like it started changing in the late 80s to what we know today, for example.
I'm wondering if you can comment a little bit about sort of that. I'm wondering if there is a tension between a place like Miami where people might think of it just for the beach and then having this desire also to preserve the history. Is there a little bit of a tension there?
Well, there's a lot of tension that when I'm giving the Art Deco tour and I explain to people that, you know, Barbara Kapperman, who was the main leader behind the Miami Design Preservation League and the push to get the district on the historic register. When she first got here in 1973 and walked around and talked about, you know, preserving the Art Deco, people gave her very low consideration, laughed at her openly, and really, you know, believed that they were going to just let all these buildings crumble once the senior citizens who lived in them died or moved to nursing home facilities. And in their eye, they were going to what we call here in South Florida, knock down the old buildings and create another condo canyon, which that's what they did beginning in the 1960s above historic South Beach, up above 41st Street, where the Fountain Blue and the Eden Rock are. I don't know if you know about those iconic hotels. Those aren't Art Deco. Those are Miami Modern or MIMO.
MIMO. I haven't heard of MIMO
before.
That's
perfect.
That's what
we call it for short. That's the new era of architecture that everyone's trying to save here. It's not just in Miami Beach. It's all over. But there's always that tension between real estate development, knocking down what's old to put up the new, and the fact that all these people are constantly flowing into Miami and it's a new place for them because it's so transient And they don't really care about the old stuff. They either left it behind in a northern city or where they came from in their own country. And they came here because it's new and, you know, growing.
Tell us a little bit about the Art Deco history. I wonder if a lot of people, now that because of this preservation work, I'm sure more people know about it, but some people still might be locked into that MIMO mindset when they are thinking about Miami and its architecture.
Well, I could tell you that I've been giving these tours since 1999. It's almost 20 years now. And the people who come to South Beach to take the tour are very different than the ones I used to meet in the early days. First of all, there's a lot more people on South Beach looking for a tour guide and a walking tour than there ever was before. Many of the people I'm meeting, a lot of Midwesterners, they just didn't used to come here before. It was always people from New York, London, you know, other people in Florida, from other parts of Florida that had come down to South Beach. So there's a much more global reach of the South Beach brand now. And as I share in the tour, when we stopped at the Versace Mansion, where he was unfortunately gunned down in July of 97, the fact that the news cycle had just started going 24/7 after his murder, and that 5 days of constant global media coverage, because the media was camped out in front of the mansion because there was a hunt for his killer that went on for 5 days here on South Beach. That really gave global audiences, it was a sordid peek, you know, onto the culture of South Beach, but it was, you know, like nonstop coverage of here we are in South Beach. It's the middle of the summer. The sky's really beautiful. The beach is right here. You know, like they had to develop other stories while they were waiting for the hunt to end.
Wow.
So it definitely raised the profile. I meet people from Thailand, India. I mean, this was not the case before when I was doing this originally, the first 10 years after I was trained by Miami Design Preservation League. Now it's, you know, it's all bets are off. It could be anyone from anywhere. I mean, I asked the first two questions I asked when we begin is, where are you from and have you ever been here before? And many more people now answer that have you ever been here before question as no, this is my first time.
Wow.
So I know that the efforts are working, and what the Greater Miami Convention and Visitors Bureau has been doing and, you know, trying to do consistently is introduce the not just the South Beach brand, but the Miami brand to people who don't know anything about it. And it's worked because not only have all these foreign tourists come here, but many Italians, Brazilians, and French people have moved here and started businesses over the past 20 years. You know, and you don't get to live too many places in the United States on the ocean surrounded by water like you do here.
Yeah. I've actually heard people say before that, that Miami's actually really the capital of Latin America.
Yeah, that's true, and that's been going on really since the 70s. While South Beach was gaining its reputation as a historic destination, at the same time, many of the Latin American banks were headquartered here. I mean, you know, they had headquarters in New York and wherever their country was, but they found it easier to do business here because it was cheaper than doing it in New York, meaning, i.e., building an office, you know, building or renting space. And the culture here was people spoke Spanish more readily, and many more people spoke Spanish as their first language than in other places in the United States.
You know, we talk a lot on Solo Travel Talk about experiencing culture, and I'm wondering if you have sort of some insight due to the nature of the work that you do about how somebody who's a tourist can really feel the culture of the place that they're visiting.
Well, I'm really a foodie. That is also part of my, you know, love for travel and touring and learning about an area, you know, learning the story about an area I visit through the people who actually live there. Because I've grown up here in a tourist town, I always want to go to places that are authentic, and I want to meet people who really live there, not part of some, you know, tourism apparatus. So, you know, I've noticed that over the past 10 years, one thing that's really stood out is that there's these, you know, people-to-people tours that you could do, you know, that some, like, around here in the Bahamas, you can actually go to Nassau, and through the culture of ministry, you can actually meet locals. Here in Miami, one of the things I try to get people to do, especially when we go to Little Havana, is to actually go drink Cuban coffee in a window on the sidewalk. In Spanish, they're referred to as the ventanitas, which are the little windows. And, you know, because of our culture, so much of it is outside because it's so hot all the time. So people just stand, and, you know, that was definitely bought from Cuba, but here in Miami, we're already used to being outside and drinking coffee on the sidewalk or drinking water on the sidewalk, whatever. And, you know, that's where you get to, you know, have that repartee with the person making your coffee who, you know, of course, is a local and has lived here and, you know, is bringing you some of the Miami culture in a small cup with sugar.
A little delicious taste of another world.
Right. I really think that food is a really good way to get into culture. When I went to Barcelona in 2006, the first thing I did was I hired an English-speaking tour guide who took me on a food tour of Barcelona.
Oh.
Food walking tour.
Oh.
We stopped. We went to the main market. She led us through that. We stopped and ate at some of the stalls. And then she took us to other places that specialized in one or two things. And, you know, I mean, someone's already come up with that idea here. They already started leading food tours. But, you know, to me now, the next time I travel, that's what I'm going to look for again, is the food tour of wherever I'm going to kind of get that local feel. And then you actually meet the real people who work there, too.
You were reading my mind. I am a huge fan of Barcelona, so you've got me totally jazzed thinking about not only a future food tour in Miami, but maybe, you know, getting back to Barcelona. That would be divine.
Yeah, the woman who led the tours, I found her online. I mean, she was from Belgium, but she had been a student there and stayed on. So her English, and, you know, because she already spoke English and Spanish and whatever the Belgian, Flemish, I guess that's what the Belgian people speak. So she really, you know, she definitely was the right person. We walked around, are you ready for this, for 4 hours.
Wow. Wow, that would be
more,
glorious.
I definitely got more, yeah, more than my money's worth. I mean, it was really, we did it the first morning because I really wanted her to introduce us so that we could go around on our own after that for the next 2 days.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. Okay, well,
I encourage you.
That sounds phenomenal. Well, so you did mention it, Little Havana, and we were already talking about Art Deco. You have more than the Art Deco tour. Can you tell us about some of the tours you lead, get into some of the specifics?
Well, the Little Havana tours, what's happened here in Miami is around 2010, because the Greater Miami Convention and Visitors Bureau and this whole approach that you need to see Miami's neighborhoods to really see the people who live here and, you know, not just be on the beach or just go to tourist areas. They really, every year at this big travel agent convention called Pow Wow, they always focus on a different part. The year that, I mean, it's been in Miami before, but that year, I think it was 2010, it might have been 2009, I can't remember exactly which year it was, but it was in that period, you know, right after the recession. So they brought all the travel agents to Little Havana, to Calle Ocho, which actually is also Southwest 8th Street. But here in Miami, everyone refers to it in the Spanish, Calle Ocho, which means literally Street 8. And they had several, you could go in to see the cigar shops where they actually roll the cigars. You could have the Cuban coffee. They actually had some restaurants offering price-fixed meals. So as a certified heritage tourism guide, they encouraged all of us to join them and to actually not only be like the travel agents, plunge into the area and see what was going on there, but to start thinking about how we would show other tourists, you know, walk them through Little Havana. Again, going back to Dr. Paul George, who I mentioned earlier, he grew up in Little Havana, and he actually is still to this day leading free tours on Friday night. That's part of a much bigger street fair that, you know, that this is also a vehicle to get people to come to Little Havana and explore it. The last Friday of every month at 5 o'clock into the evening, they have this Cultura Viernes, which means Cultural Fridays. And there's live music on the street. You know, there's Paul George leading a tour that last Friday at 7 p.m. of a different part of the neighborhood, like this Friday night, tomorrow night. He's leading a tour that I've never been on, so I'm probably going to go over there and go on it because
cool.
He is all things Miami. And then so people come from all over and join his tour, and they get the whole history of that part of Miami that's not necessarily tied to how Little Havana is now, but simultaneously they're seeing how Little Havana is now because they're walking up and down 8th Street where people are performing, they're rolling cigars. There's also cigar lounges because here in Miami, they let you, you know, it's how smoking laws have changed everywhere. Mm. So in Miami, you can smoke in a place that offers liquor but no food. In other words, there's no smoking in restaurants, But if you have a lounge that doesn't serve food and just offers liquor, you can't smoke inside. And that was, you know, constructed in that way so that you could smoke the hand-rolled cigars that either are or aren't made with Cuban tobacco. Some of it's Dominican tobacco, some of it's Nicaraguan tobacco, and, you know, that's legal.
I love the idea of this tour being sort of like a passion project.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, now it's, you know, almost 10 years later since they made this initial push with Pow Wow that I was part of, and it's definitely taken on a life of its own. Someone opened a jazz club right on Fayetteville called Ball and Chain. It's at the site of a nightclub from the 30s that hosted jazz greats like Ella Fitzgerald. And the doors are open, so you can hear the music outside. There's no cover. You don't have to go in and be, you know, go in a line and pay a cover. So that adds a lot to the liveliness and action on the street. And they're there every day, not just on that last Friday. You know, it's a business that operates daily. The other thing is there's a ice cream place that makes artisanal ice cream called Azúcar, which means sugar in Spanish. Mm. That's also right next to Ball and Chain. And then there's a cigar shop, you know, next to it. And they're across the street from a historic Art Deco movie theater called The Tower that my mother used to go to as a kid. And even in my lifetime, it's opened and closed as a theater, but in the 70s and 80s, it used to show Spanish films only, and now it's evolved into an art theater house that shows, you know, all kinds of films all year round.
It's such a treasure when we can find these like little districts that have one thing after another that have a story to tell us, and it's like you can go on your own sort of like walking adventure and really feel like you're getting an experience of a place. I love those kinds of areas
and
cities.
As a solo traveler, I learned this before I became a tour guide, that it's really great to get on to those tours, especially the ones at night, because if you're a solo traveler in a city that you're not familiar with, it's always great to be in a group to explore any area at night, whether that's for, you know, jazz clubs or restaurants or even just cocktail tours. A woman can go alone on a cocktail tour and feel totally comfortable.
That's a great point. We always are concerned about safety and feeling comfortable as solo travelers here on Solo Travel Talk. So that is exactly what the mentality that we're trying to have here.
Yeah. So, you know, that if you're in Miami and it's the last Friday of the month and you want to explore Little Havana, but you don't want to do it by yourself, one, you can go to the Tower Theater at 7 o'clock and go on one of Paul George's tours. He leaves promptly at 7 and walks around for an hour and talks the whole time. And, you know, I mean, it moves fast. You have to have the right shoes on, but it's definitely worth it. And that's year-round he does that, the last Friday of every month at 7 p.m. He also offers a lot of tours through History Miami, which is the museum in downtown Miami. You can find those online. But, you know, that's really the way to experience Little Havana in the early evening if you're a solo traveler and you don't want to venture there alone, you know, otherwise. You'll have lots of company.
I'll try and look that up and put a link in the show notes for this episode to make sure people get to that.
Because Little Havana is a little off-putting. If you get here, you don't speak Spanish, you've never been to Miami, you know, you're like asking people, what about Little Havana? Probably the locals are kind of looking at you and going, why do you want to go there at night?
Oh, I see.
But, you know, if it's like Friday night of the last Friday of every month, and there's already a lot of people there, and, you know, tour buses are dropping people off there, it's a stop on all those tour buses.
We don't often talk about that, how sometimes a tour can give a visitor access where they otherwise might not have it.
Right, right. And, you know, some of the tours that the Art Deco tours are offered also, I mean, sometimes the other tour guides, I don't know, I don't have the pass. I don't know if the hotel's still letting them, but there are some two or three access events that she's, you know, Christine, who owns a company, has actually offered, you know, how if I don't have the pass, I'm not going to be able to get people in there. So I don't know exactly who has those passes, but there aren't a lot of them. You know what I mean? Like, they don't want a lot of people going there all the time, but there's two rooftop pools that she showed me, but she never gave me the card, so I can't take anybody up there.
But we know
they're
there.
I have the pass to access it.
Yeah. That's great.
So that's how it keeps, you know, kind of keeps it as an intrigue and a special, you know, if you're with the right person, maybe you'll get access.
Oh, I see.
Little Havana is totally accessible. You know, everything's open. There's nothing secret or, you know, there's no back rooms there. So there's nothing to, you know, fear about going to Little Havana in a group or with a tour guide or with, you know, a friend. Or you can meet people on the tours. That's the other thing about solo friendly. As if you're an extrovert and you want to meet other people and you're traveling alone, being in a tour group is the best way to, you know, meet other people. You're spending a lot of time with them. You can go and have dinner with them after the tour, you know, because, you know, most people travel to enjoy other people's company.
That is,
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
right?
I sure do. I love it. And well, yeah. I love that idea of enjoying other people's company on your trip. I think that's lovely. What are some of the other must-sees that you have for Miami?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, Vizcaya Museum and Gardens, which is the James Deering estate that he meticulously built and furnished with all kinds of paintings, furniture, carpets from Italy. If you've ever been to the Villa Borghese in Rome, that's when I went to visit that for the first time. That's when I realized what the Vizcaya Museum and Gardens was supposed to be like. The gardens are formal gardens, but they're subtropical gardens. They're not English gardens. But Vizcaya, not only is the mansion a replica of an early 20th century Italianate style mansion, but it's on Biscayne Bay, so there's water views. And then there's a huge, I don't know how many acres it is, but it's a multi-acre formal gardens, but it's all based on carrying through that theme of the Italianate. It's kind of like an Italian Renaissance, but kind of conveyed in this subtropical way, if you can understand that. You have to go there to really understand what
to appreciate
saying.
It, yeah.
But it's very unique. You know, it's very unique. Like the Villa Borghese, you know, have you ever been there in Rome?
No, I haven't.
Okay, you should go there. You have to go online and make a reservation before you physically go to Rome. That's the only way they let you in. But it's a Italian house that's filled with Berlini sculpture. And there's also a huge formal garden and open park attached to it. But it, too, was somebody's mansion, you know, like in the 1600s or 1500s. And that's when I realized that James Deering was, and maybe there's a lot of those in Rome, and that's the only one that's famous, but that's when I realized what James Deering was trying to achieve here. He's the American heir to the Deering tractor fortune. A lot of people, a lot of the people that came to Miami in the 20s were the people that made their money in the Gilded Age. You know, they made their fortunes in the Gilded Age. Here on South Beach, it was more about the people that were the members of the gasoline society. They were the ones who made their money off the gasoline powered engine, like the Goodyears and the Firestones. You know, that's who the early, you know, wealthy were here in South Florida that, you know, kind of began building our infrastructure here. It wasn't until after the stock market crash of 29 and the depression that followed in the early 1930s that Miami was able to pick itself up again and start marketing itself as a more middle-class resort to people in the United States, both Miami and Miami Beach, actually.
I always find it so interesting how, especially through architecture, you sort of, a visitor can start peeling back these layers of history. So as you visit these different locations and see the different buildings, you're really walking through like time, and it's fascinating.
Exactly. Time stood still. The other highly recommended place to visit if you want to see that is the Biltmore Hotel in Coral Gables. Coral Gables itself was also built and designed and brought to life by one person named George Merrick, and that was from 1926, again. And he wasn't someone who made his fortune in the Gilded Age. You know, his family got here early, were farmers. I mean, you know, they really worked hard, and he had a vision, much like the City Beautiful movement, which was actually in New York and other places. That's how he characterized the laying out of Coral Gables. So even a trip to Coral Gables is definitely worth it. Solo travelers, you can go there during the day and night. It's very safe there. But the Biltmore Hotel is also a beautiful Mediterranean Revival hotel that has open courtyard and pool, and, you know, just the grounds are really beautiful. It's not a formal garden. It's actually, they have a golf course instead of a formal garden. But, you know, they have, it's also really, it's a beautiful place to go and behold and see some of Miami and Coral Gables' early history.
That sounds phenomenal. You just have to say Biltmore and I will be happily to go there.
Right. It's nothing like the Biltmore in Asheville, but that name must have been very popular at that time.
I think so.
Yeah. The Biltmore in Asheville is very different. You know, that's more like a mountain lodge, where this is more a subtropical Mediterranean revival kind of. It's a formal hotel, but it's just really interesting inside and out.
Alexandra, do you have any final thoughts for us about being a solo in Miami and getting the most out of your trip?
I think anytime you travel alone, you have to be extra aware and pay attention that, you know, the truth is if it looks too good, it might not really be good. Be, you know, an alert traveler. That's what I would say.
I can totally tell why Astrid wanted us to hear from you. You have just a wealth of information, and we are so grateful for you to be on Solo Travel Talk. If somebody is hearing this and they want to know more specifically about your tours, how can they find you online?
On Twitter, I tweet at the number 2 for a second, so 2ND, Gen MIA Native. So it's second Gen MIA Native. On Insta, I'm Alexandra Sobey. For the abbreviation for South Beach. Everybody here calls it, or originally when they were trying to brand South Beach, they were calling it Sobey. So that's how I have that Insta handle. It's Alexandra Sobey. And do you want me to give you my phone number?
If you want people to call you. Yeah, well, I mean, whatever.
My email? Okay.
Yeah, well, you know what I'll do is I'll put your contact information in the show notes. So if a listener wants to get a hold of you directly, they can. Awesome, Alexandra. Well, thank you so much for being on Solo Travel Talk.
Okay, Kat. Thank you, Catherine.
All right.
It was a delight. I hope you have a great day.
You too. So nice to meet you.
Thank you very much.
I will.
Likewise.
Okay, take care. All right.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Another special thank you to Alexandra Bassel for being on Solo Travel Talk. As promised, all of Alexandra's contact information will be in the show notes. Plus, if you missed any of the items that Alexandra mentioned, I tried to include all of those links there as well. All you have to do is just go to astridtravel.com, and there's a whole section for the podcast. You'll find everything you need to know for this show and all past episodes there. This podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, any of the finer places that podcasts can be found. We invite you to subscribe to Solo Travel Talk. If you like what you're hearing, you can also rate the show. We love subscribers and people who give us ratings because it helps other solo travelers find this information. I don't know about you, dear listeners, but all I can do right now is think about Miami and getting out there and how wonderful that would be. Thank you so much for listening to the show. We look forward to seeing you next week on Solo Travel Talk.
Thank you for listening to Solo Travel Talk. Follow Astrid on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. To learn more about Astrid or solo travel advisors, visit our website, astridtravel.com.